From the Moan Broadcast Center, it's the Film Week Podcast. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Film Week somewhat abbreviated today because of our fundraising schedule, but you're going to hear about a whole host of acclaimed new films this week, including Widows from British director Steve McQueen, Green Book starring Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, and At Eternity's Gate from artist and filmmaker Julian Schnabel. It's all coming up on the Film Week Podcast. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Peter Rayner of the Christian Science Monitor and Amy Nicholson of The Guardian, where she's film writer and host of the podcasts The Canon and Unspooled. Well, we begin with a fantasy action film, Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, a sequel to the 2016 film, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's directed by David Yates, written by Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling, and stars Eddie Redmayne, Catherine Waterston, Jude Law, and Johnny Depp. The sequel picks up after the capture and subsequent escape of the dark wizard Grindelwald, who then sets out to continue his plan to raise pure-blood wizards up to rule over all non-magical beings.
My brothers, my sisters, the moment has come to take our rightful place in the world where we wizards were free. Join me or die.
Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Peter?
It's not really fantastic. It's okay. It's the second of a proposed five-part prequel series to the Harry Potter empire. There are a lot of very good actors in this movie who are sort of, doing their thing in very generic strictures. I don't think that it really qualifies as being anything that's going to set the world afire, but it's good enough that at least when they start doing the other sequels, you won't feel like it's entirely done for the money. If I can just read into it, though, I think, J.K. Rowling has been very vocal about Trump and all of her tweets. So perhaps we can see the Gellert Grindelwald character played by Johnny Depp as some sort of dictator, because he certainly comes across in this movie as a totalitarian dark magic guy who wants to do away with all the goodies. And Eddie Redmayne, who's, Newt's Scamander, starts out by saying, I don't do sides. He doesn't want to take sides, but then he does take sides. So I just see this as a thinly veiled metaphor for the world of politics as we know it.
Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, rated PG-13 in wide release. Widows has an all-star cast, a drama from director Steve McQueen, who did 12 Years a Slave. Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Elizabeth Debicki, and Cynthia Erivo star. It's set in Chicago, midst time of turmoil. Four women without much in common except a debt left by their dead husband's criminal activities. They take fate into their own hands.
Now all of our work is worth nothing if we don't move this money and fast.
We gotta start thinking like professionals. We're in business together. There's not gonna be some cozy reunion. After this job, we're done. We have 3 days to look and move like a team of men. The best thing we have going for us is being who we are.
Why?
Because no one thinks we have the balls to pull this off.
Widows is written by Gillian Flynn and the director Steve McQueen. Amy, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, that cast, like two of those names are much better known to people than the rest. That would be Viola Davis and Michelle Rodriguez. But it's the other two, the less famous two, Elizabeth Debicki and Cynthia Erivo, who I think just walk away with this movie. It's about four women whose husbands all try to pull off a caper, all die in the process, and then get involved in this war between two men running for Chicago aldermen. On the one hand is Brian Tyree Henry, who's in Atlanta. He's fantastic. Competing against Colin Farrell, who comes from this dynasty of political rulers in Chicago. Both of them are terrible men. Everybody's a terrible man. Every man is terrible in this movie.
Even Robert Duvall?
Oh, shocking, shockingly. <Right.
laughs> Offbeat casting. Right.
I mean, but it's really Elizabeth Debicki. She's a 6'3" actress who wanders into this film like this hilarious flamingo. I love her, but And she has a sense that this movie should be a lot more fun than it is. You can't help with the Steve McQueen movie feeling like he just wants to tell you about how This Is America is in all capitals and then have a lot of thudding dialogue about it. I was disappointed by this movie a touch because with the cast like this, it should have been a home run.
Yeah, Liam Neeson is in it, too. You know, talk about intense. I didn't much like this movie because I think, you know, it starts out as something kind of serious and socially conscious and feminist. And then I thought it sort of devolves into, a kind of a pulp melodrama, straight-laced version of the all-female Ocean's 11 movie. And I just didn't connect with this movie on any level except Viola Davis, who I think is, as usual, incredibly good and strong and
in anything
and really carries you through a lot of the nonsense in this film.
All right. Widows is directed by Steve McQueen, who co-wrote the screenplay. It's rated R in wide release. Instant Family, comedy starring Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne. Sean Anders, the director, wrote the screenplay with John Morris. Amy.
Yeah, this is a very bizarre little comedy. It's half a Mark Wahlberg film about becoming a bumbling dad and how do I learn how to be a dad, and then half an advertisement for foster parenting. Those two kind of worlds sort of just coexist in this very strange way. What this film is about is Mark Wahlberg and his wife, Rose Byrne, decide that they should try fostering, and they kind of level up from one baby to decide to take in a full family, three kids. The oldest one is a teenager. She's 15. She's played by Elizabeth Moner, who I think they're positioning as kind of a new Vanessa Hudgens for this era. She's good. She's a very solid actress. She also sings the closing credits, so you know that they're really working on turning her into a megastar. I found this film to be so strange. It goes from, maybe the best way to sum it up is you have these two foster parent guidance kind of counselors who work with the agency. One is played by Octavia Spencer. One is played by Tig Notaro. They are absolutely unhinged in all of their advice, either incredibly straight-laced or incredibly wild. This film, I think it's supposed to function as a tearjerker. I found myself rolling my eyes a lot. I think parents might connect to this better than I could. It made me feel a little cold-hearted that I walked out of this film being like, my Lord, what did I just watch?
The TV ads make it seem confused about what it's trying to be. Is that...
Well, it's trying to walk that line of admitting that being a foster parent of three kids is incredibly hard, much harder than you think it's going to be. There is a honeymoon period at the beginning where Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne are basically high-fiving about how easy it's going. And then, of course, it all just absolutely breaks completely nuts. And they're miserable. They have a lot of honest conversations about why did we do this in the first place. And then, of course, it has to walk it back and find the happy hug ending. And the ending it finds is really ridiculous. But its heart is in its right place, and I'm glad that it ends with sort of this push. You see real-life families who have adopted children at the end, and you want to walk out being like, yes, I love you, but as a movie, I am very muddled.
No love there. All right, PG-13, Instant Family, starring Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne. It's in wide release. Green Book stars Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali. Peter Farrelly, yes, of the Farrellys, is the director and co-screenwriter. Peter, what'd you think of Green Book?
You know, there are certain movies that kind of, even while you know you're being manipulated, tremendously sort of rises above all that and you go for it anyway. And that's kind of how I felt about this movie. There are many ways to criticize this film, valid ways. But the acting, the two guys, Ali and Mortensen, are so good together that it carries you over a lot of the problems with this film. The whole way that, everyone sort of learns life lessons on this road trip to the Deep South. Life lessons just sprout like mushrooms. And you get the sense that everyone is going to be a much better person after this is all over. It's kind of like a racial reversal of Driving Miss Daisy with a little bit of Christmas Carol thrown in as garnish, with Ali's character playing, the Scrooge character. Viggo Mortensen especially is just hilarious. He put on, I hope for the film, about 35, 40 pounds apparently. But he's, he starts out, he's kind of this big Italian-American lug who's a bouncer at the Copa, and he takes this job because he needs the money. And then there's a lot of surprising nuances in his performance.
Yeah, I didn't know Viggo Mortensen could be repellent. I've never seen a repellent Viggo Mortensen before. I thought he was just a physically perfect specimen. But he has these like heavy arms and he... horrible manners. He's always rude and gross and crazy. And driving on Mahershala Ali, who goes incredibly far in the other direction, he first enters the film as a man who wears long robes and sits on a throne in his own apartment.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally regal.
Yeah, there's a lot of groaners in here. Like, there's a kind of strange sequence where Viggo Mortensen is excited to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken in Kentucky, and Mahershala Ali's character says he's never eaten it before and holds it like it's a dead mouse in his hands. And you're just wondering, where is this movie going? I didn't get won over as much as you did. I admired the effort. I think what won me over at all is the fact that this was based on a true story and that the two men in real life really did become close friends and really did shift the needle. I guess I am excited to see a movie about how we can shift the needle. But this movie, I kept being like, oh,
yeah,
man.
I'm not sure I bought it. You know, like the fact that the pianist has never heard Chubby Checker. Or Little Richard, and Viggo Mortensen says, but these are your people, you know. I mean, it's...
Green Book is the film from director Peter Farrelly. It's rated PG-13 at the Arclight Hollywood, AMC Century City, and the Landmark in West L.A. Coming up, Julian Schnabel's new film at Eternity's Gate on Film Week. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle with Amy Nicholson and Peter Rayner, our critics this week. A lot of movies to talk about next at Eternity's Gate, biographical drama about the life and work of Vincent van Gogh. Julian Schnabel directs and co-wrote the screenplay. Schnabel, of course, an artist himself. Willem Dafoe stars as Van Gogh alongside Mads Mikkelsen, Oscar Isaac, and Matthew Amalric.
The confusing people. You're confusing yourself with your paintings.
I am my paintings. I'd like to share my vision with people who can't see what I see the way I see.
Yes, but why?
Because my vision is closer to the reality of the world. I can make people feel what it's like to be alive.
At Eternity's Gate. What'd you think, Peter?
I like this film a lot, and I say that going into this movie, I said, do we really need another Van Gogh movie? There's been so many of them. I mean, last year there was this hand-drawn, animated Loving Vincent. You know, what's next? Vincent the Musical? you know. But this is, I think, a career-high performance of Willem Dafoe, who looks a lot like Van Gogh anyway. What I found fascinating about this movie is that it's the only Van Gogh movie I've seen that really – you know, when he says in the film, and a lot of the dialogue is taken from Van Gogh's letters, he says, I am my paintings. And you really feel like you are inside of Van Gogh in the way he sees in this film, in a way that I haven't found in any of the other ones, even the Altman film. I think that it falls down in the sense that it buys in too much to the madness is genius trope that is common to all Van Gogh commentaries, and my feeling is that Van Gogh is a genius, you know, despite, not because of his madness. But having said that, I think it's a vertiginous, hallucinatory, very immersive film that, you know, for all its faults, is very powerful in conveying what it's like to be from the inside.
And I'm also curious about the visuals. I mean, Schnabel, is it a visually impressive film?
It is often. Sometimes he overdoes the, you know, the shaky camera work and the multiple images and stuff. It's kind of what I call the Shakespeare problem. When you film Shakespeare, directors sometimes want to try to match the poetry with visuals, and it doesn't quite happen, you know?
I thought you were calling shaky camera Shakespeare, like the artistic version of shaky camera, which is what
Schnabel's I'm going to start using this.
That's good. Because that is what Schnabel's doing. Like, he's really trying to make this film feel immediate. You know, we on the show, we cover so many biopics of famous artists who are just sort of gray-toned and serious and somber. And this one, you're straight inside Van Gogh's perspective a lot of the time as he, like, runs through fields, looks at his feet, looks up at the trees, has people loom into view in his face, and almost a fisheye lens look where you see how he got the way he translated those images he saw into the world. Like, the camera does a somersault at one point. I mean, it's really trying to put you right there. I thought what connected to me the most about this film is this isn't about the suffering artist as much as it is about an artist who believes in his own work. You know, he's a little bit cocky about it. He's waiting for the world to catch up, and he takes pleasure in what he's doing. He's not just miserable. Although there is a scene where he tries to explain to some neighborhood kids how he sees trees the way that he does, and they just wind up throwing rocks at him.
Then it turns into Gran Torino in Arles. Let's get off my forest.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I will say that Willem Dafoe is taking a little bit of guff because he is almost 30 years older than Van Gogh was when Van Gogh died. And so you're looking at him like, hold on. But he has made the defense that with the lifespan back then, he basically was middle-aged, or he's middle-aged now. Or
it's inflation of lifespan.
Exactly.
Inflation adjusted.
You know, you see the brush strokes, you see the wrinkles, it's the same thing.
At Eternity's Gate, both of you very high on this film. Willem Dafoe stars, Julian Schnabel directed and co-wrote it. It's rated PG-13 at the Arclight Hollywood, the Landmark West L.A., and John Horn of The Frame interviewed Dafoe this week about the role. You can hear that at kpcc.org/The Frame. Gin, a drama starring Simone Missick and Zoe Renee. The film was written and directed by Nigella Mameen. What'd you think, Amy?
Yeah, this is a film that really excites me that people are going to see. This is a really, really, really strong introduction to this young director and to her young lead, who's fantastic. You know, what a djinn is in mythology is it's sort of like a shape-shifting spirit that's capable of being good or bad. It's not necessarily evil. It's not necessarily like saintly. And what it's about here is it's about this 17-year-old girl who's really trying to figure out her identity as her mother, who's a famous weathercaster in this town, is deciding to start wearing a hijab on camera, which is causing a lot of problems in her news organization. And so what's so fascinating about this girl at the center of the film is, you know, from scene to scene, she's absolutely shape-shifting herself. You know, her hair's lavender in one scene, and then she's trying to convert and follow her mother's footsteps. She's trying to pick up a young girl who works at a pizza shop, and then she's trying to flirt with a Muslim boy who's at her mother's place of worship. And so it really just is this great portrait of a girl as she's finding herself. And I was just knocked out. I mean, this is the actress herself, Zoe Renee, is a real revelation. And I'm excited for people to start to watch this film, to start to watch this actress. This is, I think, when we say we want to see more voices in film, this is a really good example of just a point of view that I absolutely love.
Gin is the film starring Simone Missick and Zoe Renee. It's written and directed by Nigella Mameen. It's unrated. You can see it at Lemley's Playhouse in Pasadena. Under the Wire, a documentary which tells the story of war correspondent Marie Colvin. You might recall last week we had the biopic film about it. This is the documentary about her experiences. Peter, what'd you think?
It's pretty powerful. It's very graphic. You know, you ever see a movie where it's about real people, but then at the end they show the documentary clips of the actual person,
yes,
and
yeah,
you kind of wish you were seeing that movie?
Yeah.
Well, this is that movie. Not that Rosamund Pike was bad in the other film,
Private War,
but you know, this is it's extremely powerful. Paul Conroy, who was her photographer, in played by Jamie Dornan in Private War, is sort of your guide through this whole process. And there's a lot of footage, I don't think any of it recreated, of what actually went down in Syria and in the city of Homs as it was being shelled, where Marie Colvin lost her life and a French photographer as well. They show you scenes of, you know, something called the widow's basement, which was a basement in a shelled area with, you know, nothing but widows and babies who were, you know, looked, quote, as shell-shocked as their mothers. You know, at one point Connery says this wasn't a war, it was a slaughter, and it's very clear that that's the case. The most powerful moment in the movie is when Conroy is given an opportunity to escape with a Syrian Red Cross ambulance, and he's told by someone there, don't take the ambulance because it's not what you think it is and you'll go to your death. So he has to make a decision: go in the ambulance and save your life, or kill your, you know, or take your chances and get out some other way. And he takes his chances. It's a very, very powerful, very inside movie.
It's directed by Chris Martin. Under the Wire, the story of Sunday Times war correspondent Marie Colvin. It's at Lemley's Playhouse and rated R. Another documentary out this week, The Last Race, a portrait of Long Island's Riverhead Raceway. Michael Dweck is the director. Amy?
I really adored this movie. It has some absolutely wild camera work. What it's about is it's about one of the last racetracks, or the last racetrack on Long Island, where there used to be 40 racetracks. Now most of them have been turned into mini malls, Walmart, shopping centers. And this one has clung on, but barely. And the camera work that they do in here, they just attach cameras to the back of these gigantic cruisers. This isn't like a cool, nifty Formula One kind of racetrack. This is like Mad Max style clunkers hitting each other, men who just do this only on the weekends,
family
screaming
cars
at each
out
other
on the drag strip.
Exactly. Yeah. And the camera, I was just, it's kind of the ultimate stoner movie. I will just say that for people who might want to go see it big this weekend. There's a gorgeous violin score, and it has that tone that I love in documentaries where, you know, it's just naturally funny from seeing what the camera sees. The camera's just so observant. It's very aware of how, say, the couple who still owns this race car track, this elderly couple, has a tiny pink poodle that's always in the frame, you know, just sitting right there as they talk about what it's like to try to keep this open. And I just, I mean, it's a slow documentary. I can see people kind of zoning out, but maybe zoning out
like
is
me.
Lovely. Well, Peter,
too slow for me.
Sorry. Hey, you know. Yeah, no, I
there's
think
there's a man on fire, and you're bored?
Let's just say I think this movie has a lot of transmission problems.
The Last Race, the documentary from Michael Dweck. It's unrated at Lemley's Monica Film Center. I just want to take a moment to talk about a film in our limited time, The Long Dumb Road, a comedy that's directed and written by Hannah Fadel. Tony Revolori and Jason Mantzoukas are the stars. Amy?
Yeah, this is a fun hangout movie by Hannah Fadel. You've got Jason Mantzoukas, who's known as this comedian with this crazy wild hair, who just bursts into the film and disrupts the road trip of a kid played by Tony Revolori. People probably know him from the Grand Budapest Hotel, who's trying to find the true America in the most pretentious sort, as in he's taking photographs of abandoned movie theaters and misery. And Jason Mantzoukas just sort of wakes him up, not in that cliche sense of he's going to change his life and open him up, but he's going to make him, you know, expand his idea. There's a little bit in here about economics, about how Mantzoukas' life is always going to go down while Revolori's life goes up. It's formulaic, but I really enjoyed the beats in it.
The Long Dumb Road, a comedy that's at the Lemley Monica Film Center, Santa Monica. It's rated R. Coming up on Film Week, we have many more movies to talk about. Plus, Peter is just back from yet another exotic location for film festivals, Los Cabos. He'll talk with us about the International Film Festival there as we continue on Film Week.
KPCC podcast supporters include UCLA's Center for the Art of Performance, presenting LA's Uncabaret, celebrating 25 years with this one-time-only evening of live comedy, music, and never-before-seen footage from the vault. Featuring Beth Lapidus, Patton Oswalt, Julia Sweeney, Janine Garofalo, Bob Odenkirk, Greg Barron, and Jill Soloway. Also featuring Maria Bamford, Julie Goldman, Byron Bowers, and surprise guests. Tickets at cap.ucla.edu.
Great to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Peter Rayner and Amy Nicholson. Next up, the mystery thriller Cam, starring Madeline Brewer and Patch Adera. It's directed by Daniel Goldhaber in his feature directorial debut. He co-wrote the screenplay for Cam. Amy?
This is a film I was not expecting much from. It's a low-budget horror film set in the world of cam girls, the women who are online taking off clothes for people, giving them tokens on the internet. And you're thinking, okay, that's an easy excuse for TNA in a horror film. And it is. There's a lot of T and there's a lot of A. But oh my goodness, these two filmmakers are really fascinating. This is their new film. This is their debut film. And they have made themselves people to watch. Issa Mazai, the writer, she used to be a cam girl, but she's also like a student with like a ton of degrees. She's really intelligent. She's into experimental cinema. And she's made this film that's about a girl really experimenting with identity. Madeline Brewer, who plays Lola, the cam girl, she knows that her Lola shtick is an act, and so it's very much about her ambition behind the camera and her fake cheerfulness in front of the camera. I know she calculates about how she's going to break into the top 50 of her cam girl website with such ruthless, all about Eve abandon. Like, you love her. She's terrific in this film. And then what happens is once you get into this world of like the different customers she cozies up to, how she gets to try to spend more time with them, the money she's trying to make, the secrets she's keeping, suddenly she wakes up one day, she's locked out of her account, and there's a girl who looks exactly like her who's taken it over. And then the film takes this other twist of like her trying to reclaim her identity in a world where it's not really her identity in the first place. And the actress winds up performing three roles, really. The girl behind the camera, the girl in front of the camera, and then this doppelganger who is ruining her life.
That sounds like a tough movie to pull off.
You know, it really
is. Let alone describe.
Exactly.
That's very well.
But there is just some really interesting camera work going on in here, some really interesting performances. And, you know, I sat down half rolling my eyes at this, and now I'm like, I'm going to watch everything they do from here on out. This is a really fascinating debut.
Well, explains, I guess, why Netflix picked this up. It's streaming on Netflix. Cam is the film from director Daniel Goldhaber, starring Madeline Brewer and Pat Sdera. It's unrated. The Gilligan Manifesto is a documentary about Gilligan's Island, but not really in a conventional way. Peter, what does it reveal about the origins of Gilligan's Island?
Well, just sit right back and you'll hear a tale, yeah, a tale sure of a tale. All right. Now that I've put that earworm into 200,000 listeners, I love this movie because it's completely insane and very straight-facedly wants us to believe that Gilligan's Island, which was created the year after the Cuban Missile Crisis, is actually a not so thinly veiled parable for the virtues of living in a communist society. With these, you know what though, the damnedest thing, it kind of makes you believe it after a while because it, you know, Sherwood Schwartz, who created the show, is actually interviewed in it. And, you know, I'm sure he lived in a very spacious home and was a big capitalist, but he does make some noises about it being a Marxist paradigm. But the big answer that why was it called Gilligan's Island? I mean, there were all these other people on the island, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's because Gilligan was, along with Mary Ann, was the only working class person on the island.
Couldn't be Skipper's Island or Professor's Island.
No, certainly not, Mr. Howell's
no,
Island.
No, not Mr. Howell's Island.
No, you know, and they show you all these clips that sort of demonstrate, you know, the legislative branch, the executive branch.
This is hilarious.
They have clips from, you know, Cold War clips of J. Robert Oppenheimer, the bomb, you know, bursting. And it's completely insane, but on some level, you got to hand it to these guys. They also have these academics who very sincerely talk about this film as if it was, I mean, the show as if it was
the Communist Manifesto.
A Communist Manifesto. They quote from Marx. You know, it's also an example of what is happening in a lot of academia now, where you have these deep dish analysis of pop culture in unreadable, unviewable terms. And you know, on some level, it all kind of comes together, but it's insane.
Kevin Soling is the director. So I wonder, you know, Schwartz also did The Brady Bunch. Is the next film
right.
going to be how about that's really a commune? It's not just a blended family. But
I'm sure. Right. It's worth a PhD thesis.
Yeah. If only Florence Henderson was here to tell you about it. The Gilligan Manifesto, the documentary is unrated. Again, Kevin Soling is the director. It's at Lemley's Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills. Well, Peter always gets to go to the film festivals in the most exotic locations. And, of course, beautiful Los Cabos, their international film festival. He's just back from there. Peter, as I recall, there are a lot of Spanish language films that play there.
Yeah. I mean, the virtue of this festival, above all, is first of all, it supports the Mexican film industry. There are a lot of students who are there to see the films. They have various funds. There's the Gabriel Figueroa Film Fund. He was a great cinematographer, did a lot of great Buñuel movies, supports new talent. There's a pitching workshop, Works in Progress Awards. So, you know, they do a lot. But they do feature usually about a dozen or so Mexican movies primarily, a lot more Spanish language films. And there's always something, you know, interesting that shows up. The heartbreaker is that often these films don't get distribution. And in the case of this year's films, some of them are pretty niche films, and I would hope that some of them do get distribution anyway, such as Yo No Soy Guapo, I Am Not a Thug, which is a terrific documentary about the Sonidero movement, which I knew very little about. It's sort of these mobile sound systems in Mexico City that are set up sort of impromptu in the streets. There's lots of neon and dance, salsa, tropical rhythms, and there's also some violence that sometimes gets attached to this, so the cops are always there. And these, this, the Sonidero, it's sort of like a, it's about the urban identity of these neighborhoods and the fighting the gentrification with these street fairs. And there was this one woman, La Cigarita, who was there for the festival, who was just a bundle of energy. I mean, she should have a telenovela devoted entirely to herself, who's going on about how great this is and how she has to fight off the authorities. You know, it's a very, very interesting movie directed by Joyce Garcia.
That's Yo No Soy Guapo. Lupita La Cigarita is featured, that part of the Los Cabos Festival. Also, Sigüesas, or Storks drama.
Yeah, that was the first feature by Heriberto Acosta. It's about a young girl who she's a seamstress in Guadalajara, and she goes on a road trip with her best friend, a gay man, Arturo, to get an abortion. And it starts out very slowly and sort of Antonioni-esquely. It's interesting how the kind of Italian and French New Wave stylistics enter into some of these films out of nowhere, it seems. But it becomes more interesting as it moves along, and the two of them have a fight, and you know, particularly with the culture and the whole attitude toward abortion there and where she comes from. It really is very heartbreaking at the end, is, you know, what happens and how she deals with it. And it's very haunting and lyrical in a lot of ways. The actress who plays the seamstress goes by the name Jenny RVC. And I think it was her first film.
The movie, again, Sigüesas, from writer-director Heriberto Acosta. The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. That's the Terry Gilliam film.
Yeah, Terry Gilliam. This is a 29-year project. Adam Driver and Terry Gilliam were both there. This is a movie that has been fraught with more difficulties than just about any movie ever, including anything ever made by Orson Welles. It's not a bad movie. It just has so many fraught legal issues that it may never be shown in America. When Gilliam introduced the film in Los Cabos, he said, "This is the most important screening I will ever have, because if you love this movie, it will do well in Mexico." You know, a lot of burden to lay on the audience. But it's a very strange movie that doesn't always work, but it certainly deserves to be seen, and I would hope that there is a distributor who will pick it up.
Well, and hopefully these other films will receive some notice here as well. The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, Yo No Soy Guapo, Sigüesas, just few of the films that Peter saw, 7th Annual Los Cabos International Film Festival on Baja. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC.